CliffCentral.com.
It's Dido with White Flag. I always imagine that singers like Dido, who were around for a while and then they kind of went away, I always imagine they're living these great lives, but privately, you know, like they don't go to the shops and they don't do anything normal people like us do, but they're living in these amazing places and they go on holidays and they're living off the royalties of those songs from all those years ago. But I don't know what Dido's doing. She might be suffering in a studio trying to churn out her next big hit.
Probably wondering why her tea's gone cold.
That's a great song too. She
had a
song.
Couple. She had the White Flag song. She had the tea going cold. But I feel like I'm missing her biggest hit.
Wasn't she with Eminem, Stan?
Yeah, but that was that. She had the song about the tea going cold, and then Eminem remissioned it into his song.
So. But don't look her up or anything. I don't actually want to know. I've got this fantasy that people like her are living a great life. She's probably unhappy because she hasn't had a hit in like 10 years. But, you know, I don't want to know that.
Yeah, I like was kind of disappointed, but at the same time, also like it ingratiated me to like when I started to get to know some of the bands locally and then later internationally that I'm like always been huge fans of, like almost no metal musicians. And a lot of them are hardworking people that like, in you know, they're not like doing drugs and spending it all on booze. Some of them, they don't get rich. Bands that are famous all around the world, like they don't get rich. They just make like a decent living.
Yeah.
Like the guys in Lamb of God are not millionaires and they're like one of the biggest metal bands ever. The guys in Slipknot, I read a lot of Corey Taylor's books and I follow him on social media. He's like, says, yeah, I do all right now, but it's taken till now, 20 years.
I heard such a great story about Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters and how he... Food Fighters, yeah. So of the Foo Fighters, and he was... they were doing a tour, and he was big mates with some other band. And I'm not going to ruin the story because what I'll do is post a link for it later on. You can hear it in his own words. But basically, he left his wallet at a filling station on a road trip while they were touring. And like 11 years later or whatever, he got a call or a letter or something from some woman who says, yeah, you left your wallet at my parents' filling station 11 years ago. And if you want it, I've still got it for you. And basically, it just gives you an idea of how these people's lives are actually quite normal sometimes. You know, he uses his wallet to pay for fuel at a fuel station while they're trucking across America. And this is Dave Grohl, you know. He's no schmuck.
He's like just cool in a special and unique
Such a
way.
Cool
he's
guy.
Like the little light in the world.
Yeah, he's
I mean, I've never been wild about music. I don't dislike it. I've just never been a huge fan. It's never been a big thing for me. But, like, I've always got time for them because they just seem like
I'm definitely a fan. All right, so later on we're going to find out about the benefits of ozone. You know, the stuff that we have a layer of that protects us from excess UV radiation. But that's what most people know. There's actually a medical benefit, and we're going to explore this with the guys from Windsor Health a little bit later on, just find out what they mean. I know that ozone is, you know, like oxygen is O2, you know, breathable oxygen.
Uh-huh.
It's two oxygen atoms that have formed a molecule, O2, and they share two electrons. That's how O2 functions. O3 is ozone, and that is obviously a very different molecule, has different properties, different reactions with various other chemicals. I want to find out a bit about this, and we may get into the science. I won't go too deep into the science, though, because I know it bores some people to death. And we'll find out also if there are medical, because a lot of stuff that we hear about, you know, certain things, it sounds like quackery. And we'll find out whether this one is a good one or not. Okay.
I'm for ozone. I'll just summarize my perspective.
You've already determined your position, and you are
I'm pro ozone.
Apparently,
we need that stuff. Bring it. Pump it into the atmosphere.
So apparently, J.K. Rowling handed back an award, a very important award, the Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Award. She said she would rather stand by her principles, where she said, you know, a man is a man and a woman is a woman. And this shouldn't be a controversial thing. This is what biology shows in every species on Earth.
And God, am I trying to disassociate myself from this show so far?
Yeah, I know you are, because you hate a controversy, Gord.
I just prefer not to get involved.
No, I know, but so we've got to talk about it, because it's a big story. And J.K. Rowling, of course, the author of the Harry Potter series. She's made billions of pounds. She's probably the most successful author alive today.
Yeah. And Stephen King and her, I think, probably.
And she's gone to such trouble to include characters which represent, you know, various parts of the community that may not get as much representation in certainly classical literature as they might get today. And she's not someone who goes around hating on the trans community. But she said, you know, she doesn't think, for example, that just because someone wakes up in the morning and decides to identify as a woman, that makes them a woman. She said that that's not a feminist position. And you can look up her comments yourself if you don't like to hear my paraphrasing of her, because it's very delicate to talk about these things. The minute you say, for example, that a big bearded man, like if Gord woke up tomorrow, and Gord is hoping, Gord is pretty, Gord is pretty masculine. If Gord woke up tomorrow and he said, I'm now identifying as a peregrine falcon, I don't have to, I mean, I have to be mean to Gord and say, look, you're not, you're a stupid idiot, and how dare you. What I can do is I can just choose not to address him as falcon. I can call him or his or Gord without being a transgressor of Gord's rights. His imagination, wild as it may be, does not need to be subject to my approval. And similarly, I don't need to change my language in order to fit into Gord's fantasy. I think that's a fairly kind, considerate, thoughtful place to be. I don't think it requires anyone to be held legally responsible for any of those positions just mentioned.
Look, I mean, unless anyone can clearly make a reasonable argument that anything in her books is hate speech, she can write what she wants and say what she wants. Well, but
she's decided because of criticism from the trans community, she's decided to hand back an award. And she said, I don't need this. I'd rather have my principles.
She knows that it'll be a shitstorm. She knows. So she's like, she's not like the caller just now who kind of wandered into a shitstorm and is now going, yes, this is a lot.
So you think she's looking for it?
Well, I think she just knows there will be a backlash. I mean, I don't think she's surprised when she gets a shitstorm for that. I don't think she's like feeling like, oh my God, what's happening? They're trying to ruin my life and all I did was say my opinion. She's probably like, yeah, screw you guys. It sounds like a confrontational statement.
Okay. Well, JK has been very firm and solid with her word around this. It all began a couple of months ago. It was last year around June. Yeah. When she commented on an article where on Twitter, of course, where great conversations happen.
Best place ever.
An article that that used the phrase people who menstruate.
The shitter. It is the shitter of humankind. What does JK stand for, by the way? I've never known that. Joanne. Also, J.R.R. Tolkien. J.R.R. Maybe he's junior to junior. So he's junior.
J.R.R. Tolkien's first name is John.
So with J.K., it was Joanne Kathleen, if I'm not mistaken. But she shortened it to J.K. because her publishers or someone advised her that, you know, you're writing a book about that needs to appeal to young boys. So to know that a woman wrote it might not appeal to young boys. So that's why they went
with
J.K.
Kind of chauvinism there. That's interesting.
I haven't been lynched for that.
So
hold on, because Gord asked a question and we all hate when we don't get an answer. So John Ronald Reuel Tolkien is what J.R.R.
That's exactly what you need J.R. Tolkien's name to be. I just want to say, Gareth, that you said just now if I identified as a peregrine falcon, and I'd like you to know that if I'm identifying as a bird, I'm a Nicobar pigeon.
Okay.
My bestie Gumpy alerted me to the existence of the Nicobar pigeon, and that is now officially my official bird of Gord Laws.
What is a Nicobar pigeon?
It's a pigeon. So it's like, okay, you're a shitty rat bird. But it's like, fuck you. I'm going to be the most spectacular thing in the world.
It's beautiful.
Nicobar pigeon is the shit.
Okay, thank you. So we've now gone off on two separate tangents with J.R.R. Tolkien and Nicobar pigeons.
And the trans hippies that are fighting her.
Yeah, let's just get back to J.K. Rowling.
Yeah. She was responding to an article. That's how the whole brouhaha started. The article was talking about people who menstruate. And that's when she commented and said, people who menstruate. I'm sure there used to be a word for those people. Someone help me out. Is it wumben, wumpound, woman? So she was hinting at women, of course. Yeah. So she faced criticism around that. She was called, her views were called trans-exclusionary views, with people pointing out that not just women, but non-binary genders menstruate too. So she then wrote a lengthy blog around this, how she couldn't be termed a, how she couldn't be termed a transphobe. She's rallied for trans rights for a very long time. And then Daniel Radcliffe, Rupert Grint, and Emma Watson, you know, the main three stars of Harry Potter, fueled the fire, in my opinion, by coming out and taking a stand against JK's views. So, of course, oh, that's
those three morons should get on their knees every morning and thank the Lord Jesus Christ for JK Rowling. They should have shrines in their house.
She's got enough money that whatever they say, she'll just keep on JK Rowling.
But you know this? Yes. God. But let me just be fair here. Like, those three stupid morons, those actors who pretend for a living, who haven't had the imagination to create anything nearly as good as the roles that she did for them to inhabit. She should be demanding tribute from them, and not just in money. She should go to their house, or they should come to her house every day and worship at her feet, because J.K. Rowling made those three idiots. No one would even know their names if she hadn't come along.
You see, what I don't understand is... And once again, this is my opinion, I'll stand
Harry
with
Potter.
It.
What's Harry Potter done since Harry Potter?
They can distance themselves from her opinion. Like, I don't agree with everything
you know what I'm getting at here.
You're the reason I'm on the radio, so I should just agree with everything you say.
Who's that little
turd? What do I think today, Gareth? Whose team am I on?
Who's the ginger turd in the with Grimes?
Rupert Grint.
Whatever his name is.
He did a TV series of Snatch, and it was crap.
That guy should be
Ron Weasley.
He should be writing a letter in triplicate right now, begging for her forgiveness, saying, "I shall never, oh great mother of literature, who made my ugly visage a part of a multi-billion-dollar empire, and who deserves every cent that you have, great madam of the skies and of the pen."
I don't know.
Yes, he should. He should be writing that. "Please forgive me for my stupid comments standing against you."
Can we play 10 minutes of R&B just to make this the perfect show for Gord? Like,
so I'm in the middle between what you say, Gord, and what you believe, Gareth. I feel like they're entitled to their opinion, but they didn't have to say anything. Yeah, Why do they have to say it?
Don't forget about me needing to say something.
Guys, listen, I'm not saying they don't deserve...
That's part of the problem.
You know my point of view. Everyone deserves an opinion, but those three are ungrateful little shits. And really, like, that's a separate issue. I'm not saying they can't say what they want, but they're ungrateful little shits to turn their back on J.K. Rowling. And frankly, there are lots of things that J.K. Rowling has done that I probably wouldn't agree with, but who cares about me? I'm not important.
It's not that they should be beholden to have an opinion that's respectful to her or any of that. It's that now these three, because they played in a movie child actors that was based on a book written by this individual, millions of people are going to take their comment on it as being more important than you, who sits and tweets all day while she watches operas. Like, three more people that have an opinion, and no one has to give a shit either way. See, everybody has the right to an opinion, but nobody has the right to an audience. The problem is they have an audience. Mm-hmm. You have to earn an audience.
I'm being obstreperous.
They already have.
You're trolling the whole show.
Damn right.
I can see your little trolley face.
I'm in a trolley mood. But what is Harry Potter's name? Daniel Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe. I think they're underrated.
Yes.
He has done some cool things afterwards. But, I mean, really, if he hadn't got the Harry Potter role, we probably wouldn't know who he was.
And he also reckons there's a double-edged sword, because he doesn't like fame. He's, like, super awkward. And he was casted because he looked for the part.
And Emma Watson. I mean, Emma Watson, really, she's the most ungrateful of all, because she has become this kind of spokesperson. Doesn't she open her mouth and start talking about
it? I don't have an opinion on Emma Watson. So good for her. Wow. But Daniel Radcliffe's acting, and you can't hold it against him because of the time it was done, the special effects and the acting in the first two Harry Potter movies are so appalling that even for the time, I'm like, how did people get so into this? You could see he was taking learning to act after being cast quite seriously. But I wasn't going to watch the movies until I'd read the books. And this was about 2-3 years ago. I finished the books and watched all the movies. And wow, the first two, and also to an extent the third, are terrible. No one can act.
Really?
Thing looks like a foam puppet. Everything is a foam puppet.
All right. Tell me, Sia, you've done some research into
so,
this. Yeah, go on.
Sorry, just to conclude on how we got to this point. And
how we got here.
How the hell did we get here, guys?
JK got to returning her ward because... Yeah. She got to returning her award because the Kennedy Human Rights Award and organization released a statement on the 3rd of August on their website saying, over the course of June 2020, which is LGBTQ Pride Month, and much to my dismay, J.K. Rowling posted deeply troubling transphobic tweets and statements. Mm-hmm. Trans rights are human rights. J.K. Rowling's attacks upon the transgender community are inconsistent with the fundamental beliefs and values of the RFK human rights and represent repudiation
yeah.
of my father's vision.
Well, you know
that's
what?
One. And so after that statement, JK was like,
well, good for JK Rowling for saying, take your award and shove it then. I don't need this. And frankly, Robert F. Kennedy's children, none of whom have achieved anything of any real importance in their lives. They just happen to be Robert F. Kennedy's children.
Keep J.K. Rowling, yeah. Rowling, Rowling.
You guys are such moral examples.
My book's right here, J.K. Rowling, up in it right here. Take your awards, stick it into your hand. Sorry.
No, J.K. said
Gord is off on a tangent.
Yeah, I'm just creating my own fun over here. Talk about everything that makes me uncomfortable.
Okay, so Gord, do you want to hear about what people in 1900 thought that 2000 would be like? Because Sia found this article, and I think it's kind of funny. Remember 1900, where basically you lived in your own ordure, and you were mostly, you drank petrol because water was too filthy, and you were sent to war at the age of 7, and it was just a horrible time, right?
Yeah. Everybody, like, glamorized it. You pretty much died in war or scurvy or got some sort of sickness that there's no vaccine for. You had to fight a war with the after effects of polio, and then if you survived that war, die of dysentery. But like,
it's
you
great.
17 and 3 of them got to adulthood, so you did well.
And then the Rinderpest came and took out the ones that survived.
Yeah, you just basically had soot as your food. I've heard about this new technological breakthrough. They call it a machine gun. I wonder what that's going to make the future
it's
like.
It's going to make it so much better for my three uncles who are on the front.
Yeah, they've invented, and they're digging a thing called a trench. Yeah. I don't know what they plan to do, but it's exciting.
And they've invented something called a concentration camp in South Africa, which is going to be so nice when it eventually gets perfected in Germany.
To alter the landscape and create trenches, which are essentially long holes, and it'll make war so much better.
And how's your bowl of soot there, Gord? It tastes great.
It's great. I swear. I swept it myself this morning.
Can I add a handful of soil to that for you?
Well, it's my birthday, so I'm getting salt, and I'm adding a teaspoon of salt. It's the family ration for the week, but on birthdays. Yeah, very few of them.
So, Sia, what did they say?
So,
Sia's having an apoplexy.
I can't. It was back in 1900, a German chocolate company did a bit of a campaign around predicting the future. They were known as Hildebrands, and they were taking some of the best ideas and producing them as a series of postcards, imagining what life would be like in the year 2000. And there were different people who submitted, and some of them actually predicted quite accurate things that now exist today. So someone depicted live broadcasts of plays, and if you think about it, that's what we know today as television.
We can broadcast the play live as it's we can live stream, but we haven't figured out how to film yet and let it be somewhere. Just stay. You have to perform. If you want to watch the Netflix, right, you decide you want to watch Saving Private Ryan at 2 in the morning. They've got to rouse the Saving Private Ryan cast. And then you decide where you want to pick up. Like, do you want to fast forward to a special place and have to reset? And then they do the play.
It is very important. It was very important to someone. So that is how they thought about it.
But hang on, they got that one right then.
Kind of. I think I want to ask if we have some form of slave, because that's probably like they wanted to upgrade the forced labor work, I would imagine, back then. Oh, no, slavery is more 1800s, eh?
Yeah. By the mid-1800s, slavery was mostly outlaw.
I was assuming they would have, like, designed robot super slaves.
So hang on, Tia, what else is this
a little sad, even though I reckon it's a great idea. It's just sad that we haven't got to this yet. They pictured us living in cities with glass rooftops above us, so that we could function and coexist underneath without being affected by the weather much. So, for example, if it was raining outside, we'd be underneath and not affected
by
that.
Like a sky dome.
Not really the worst idea.
Glass buildings.
What's that, Gordon?
I guess.
We have glass buildings.
Yeah, but I mean, they obviously imagined it like a dome. Do you remember there was that series about that dome?
The dome. It was total crap. Stephen King book it was based on was brilliant.
Okay. Well, that's a good one. What else?
Somehow they pictured the fact that we would be going to the North Pole for summer holidays. Don't know what technology they thought we'd be doing.
I missed that by about 30 years.
Well, global warming, they might be onto something.
But it was a positive view.
I reckon this is quite accurate, though. Personal flying machines. So I don't think to the point of envisioning airplanes, but it really looks like, you know what they have now in depicting self-driving or flying machines just for yourself? You like pop in and you have a...
That sky car. In fact, they've developed something to a point now in Japan where it looks like it might even be feasible.
Yeah, they've already got working prototypes of that. They're trying to decide how they're going to integrate it into regular society and make it safe so they don't fall out the sky. Right. They're also waiting for electric battery, EV batteries to reach a certain point, which they're about two-thirds of the way to in terms of storage capacity before you can safely fly around with one.
And then last two, which I actually think are really cool. So the first is imagine a set of buildings, but that are all placed on a large wagon, so you can decide, sure, today I want my house and my office set in Bryanston, and then tomorrow I'm going to wheel my house and office to the other side of town and be stationed there.
I like the way it's on a wagon.
Yeah, I like the idea of things being sort of portable. Is just it needs to be portable, so it's obviously pulled by horses.
Yeah, the picture itself has these buildings set on wheels and there are people on the side pulling it along.
I think we'll be even further off if we do our predictions now of what it'll be like in 2100. I think we'll be much further off than them.
100%. Completely. I mean, I'm going to ask you, each of you, for a prediction that you are virtually 90% sure will come true. So it has to be something that you can confidently say, yes, this is likely. Come on, let's see what you got.
Well, assuming humankind doesn't die of any
let's
major
disaster.
Let's
say in 100 years from now, because...
There's no major apocalyptic events and we continue to progress without any like centuries setback. We will be integrated with cybernetics. Our consciousness will be downloadable. We will be able to travel around it, certainly the solar system, if not further, if we find some loophole with the speed of light, but definitely around the solar system. And we'll be able to bioengineer our bodies to better suit those environments. And the physical domain will be very much kind of utilitarian.
I love that. I can't disagree. I think that's very likely to happen. It might even happen in 50, not even 100 years.
You won't need your body to have meaningful interactions. You can go into the network and live your life there and, you know, do far beyond what you can do now. You'll have Neuralink times your wildest dreams times 1,000.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Sia?
Gosh.
You got a prediction?
I don't know.
Sure, we'll still be with
no,
us.
No, I think we would have... yes, and her mother. But I think we would have really advanced when it comes to virtual reality. I really don't think we'll be leaving the house much.
Well, we've learned that this year. Everybody was like, oh, I've got travel plans for 2020. Yeah, that's going to happen. I mean,
I was going to quote the song and say nothing will change except they live underwater and your great 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 daughter is pretty fine.
Pretty fine.
Metallica will still be the best band in the world.
Okay, good. I do like the idea that Cher will still be there in 100 years.
She'll still be there, just to be well hot.
Do you think that the first person who will live to 200 is already alive?
Again, assuming no like apocalyptic events. Mm. Yeah.
Jeez, that would be amazing. I want it to be me, but I don't want to actually get old. I want to live for a very long time, but I don't want to get older. Like, I can't imagine how awful a 200-year-old would look.
Not aging is the key to immortality. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, dude, the stem cells now, they're getting more and more, like, not only able to, get them, harvest them without needing embryos and all of that, but also to target where they need to go. So if you got stem cell treatment, and again, I'm a lay person, so no one lynch me on the internet if I get some of the details wrong, but they would inject or get the stem cells to the area where you have the injury that needs repair. And it's kind of like you hope some of them stick. Now they like know how to specifically place them and get the right ones to take in the right place. I mean, we'll be regrowing limbs and organs either on our body like Ryan Reynolds in Deadpool or separately, and we can then assimilate them in. So your body, unless something kills you, your body will be upgradable, serviceable, replaceable, renewable.
I like that a lot.
Unless some tragic impact completely like writes you off, bends your axle and breaks your chassis,
yeah,
and they have to write you off, they can just pretty much put you back together.
So it does. I like the car analogy.
You think that will be the norm in 100 years?
I think, I also think in 100 years there might be 300,000 surviving humans scattered around the world trying to learn how to make fire. But, assuming we keep going and you find some way to sort out the carbon situation and don't nuclear war each other and the ice caps don't entirely melt, et cetera, then yes, I think that's my limited imagination. I think that's the start. I think that's my plays that can be streamed to the world view of what's actually going to happen. I think it's going to be totally incomprehensible to us now.
Well, I like your analogy of a car because, again, like you only write off a car if the thing is beyond repair, and it's more effort to, to kind of bring it back than to get a new one, kind of thing.
Yeah, to fix it is harder than getting a new one.
Yeah,
or it can't be fixed.
But we should be able to replace certain parts and kind of keep ourselves more or less young and functional forever, and that's not too far away according to some of the futurists. I mean, I've quoted Ray Kurzweil.
Yuval Harari's good stuff on this as well.
Yeah.
Amadeus.
There's some very smart people who have predicted that this is not just likely, but inevitable.
There's also an inevitability that it's going to be class-based, and technology is very much based on who has access to technology, is very much based on who's got the financial access. And so the gap between regular humans and next generation, Homo Deus, if you like, is going to get wider and wider and wider until we're actually two separate species. Either everyone will have to assimilate or most of everyone will get left behind. I wanted to say that I realized yesterday when I watched the test flight of a Blue Origins engine, that's Jeff Bezos' space company that are doing bigger things. In theory, they're doing bigger things more slowly than SpaceX. In reality, I don't think they've got, but it's like a Tony Stark versus Lex Luthor in a battle for space. Musk versus Bezos.
But it's great because everything about their little, and I don't know whether it's an ego thing for either of them, because I think their intentions are pure. They're both self-made men. You know, they don't come from wealth. They both, all with their ideas and their hard work, have put together these amazing companies that have made everyone's life better. So it's not just about them being billionaires, and they are. I think Elon Musk is now the third richest person in the world, and Jeff Bezos the first. Congratulations to some dude born in Pretoria, if it's ego, even on a small level, and what we've got to acknowledge about men is that our competitive nature does spur on innovation and competition.
I know some competitive women.
Well, yes, but it's a very manly thing to like try and beat your opponent. It's definitely part of it. So I think that it'll be interesting to watch which one of these guys develops the next big thing. And as you say, if they're in competition, which I don't know that they are, they might
be. Space, they definitely are. They're each other's direct competition, Blue Origin and SpaceX. They both have NASA. They both have NASA projects.
Good. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. All right, Gordo, thanks for joining us this morning, dude. Yeah,
great time, guys. Have a fantastic day, everybody.
I know you didn't enjoy all the R&B music, so we'll.
From some of the statements, but I love you, and I'm glad to be here.
All right. Thank you, Gord. There's Gord Laws, everybody. It is just after 7:30 in the morning. And I mentioned earlier that we're going to talk a little bit about health today, because this is something which we were just going down the road of with Gord now and kind of trying to live longer and healthier. And I want to talk a little bit about something that I read a while ago. And I don't know a lot about this, so I thought we'd speak to the guy who's in charge of the business that's trying to make it possible for more of us to access ozone therapy. And this is something I really don't know a lot about. I know a little bit about ozone, but we've got to talk to the people who are expert in the field. Ozone Elite is the business that we're going to talk about, of Windsor Health, and we're going to talk to the managing director there. His name is Paul Honeyford. Hey, Paul, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Gareth. Are you well?
Yeah, well, I mean, according to what I've read, you could make me even more well.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. There's no question. It's what we've been doing for 23 years now, Gareth.
All right. Now, I remember 23 years ago, ozone was a big issue in the world because we had a big hole in the ozone layer and it was letting through UV radiation. And it was, people are terrified. And, you know, chlorofluorocarbons in our deodorant and hairspray, which was a big thing in the 80s, and that was killing the ozone layer. Ozone is 3 oxygen atoms in a molecule.
It is. Well, of course, we remember from school that oxygen is O2.
Right.
Well, ozone is O3. It's oxygen with an extra O1 molecule. So in other words, it's a super form of oxygen, activated oxygen, more commonly known as medical ozone, Gareth.
All right. So ozone, as I understand it, chemically is a very unique molecule. It does some very strange things. And one of the reasons it exists in a very thin layer above the Earth is because it's quite reactive. And it gets split into oxygen very easily, right? The O3 molecule is not particularly stable. And apparently it smells almost like an electric fire.
Yes, it does.
It does. Is that true?
Yes, it's that sweet smell in the air after a thunderstorm. You know, when we've had a massive thunderstorm, because when the lightning strikes, that's called corona discharge. Yeah, corona is not a good word to be using at the moment, but it's called corona discharge. When the lightning strikes, it splits the O2 molecule into O1s. The O1 is unstable. It's naturally attracted in nature to an O2, so the O1 grabs the O2 and becomes O3. Now, that in itself is not that difficult to do. By the way, Gareth, that's why you sleep better after a thunderstorm. There's more oxygen in the air. We're very low in oxygen at a cellular level in our bodies. It's why we get sick so often. And obviously, if there's more oxygen in the air, the body relaxes, you sleep better. Now, it's also the smell you get when you walk down the beach, because what happens is when the waves crash against the shore, they crash against the rocks, it also splits the O2 and forms O3. Now, as I said, that's not in itself difficult to do. Every electric motor on the planet will do that for you. But what we're doing is, and what makes us unique, is that we're producing a medical dose of ozone. It's very specifically 0.06 parts per million. And that simply means you can breathe the stuff. Because in high doses, ozone can irritate the lungs, for instance.
Sure.
So we have to be very careful. And we're producing a very specific medical dose at 0.06 parts per million. So you can breathe it. When we started developing this tech, and we are number one in medical ozone in Africa now, we're one of only 4 companies in the world who are certified to produce a medical dose of ozone. So you can breathe it, and with our system, it can be absorbed through the skin. You can bubble it through water and drink it.
Okay, so a lot of people would say, this idea of having just more oxygen around, I mean, there's been oxygen therapy for a long time, and there isn't that much medical science to back up the fact that if you just go and breathe in high concentrations of oxygen, it's going to make that much of a difference, or am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's obviously oxygen is important. I mean, I always say, God forbid you're in a car accident. When the ambulance arrives, what's the first thing they give you?
Yeah.
Oxygen. Why? Why don't they give you a Panado? They give you oxygen because they know if they can raise the oxygen saturation in your body will start to heal. Now, the difference between O2 and O3 is that O3 does some wonderful things in the body. First of all, it attaches to the red corpuscle, so we're boosting the oxygen saturation. But importantly, it's attaching to the white corpuscles, and this is your immune system. Right. So we're doing two things with our technology. We're raising the oxygen saturation at a cellular level, but we're also boosting the immune system. Of course, your immune system is your defense.
And in the normal atmosphere, O3 does turn into O2 anyway. So as you say, it's a source for more oxygen. Now, what is your company's origin? I mean, tell me about where you guys started. And you said it's been 23 years. So give me a little timeline of where you've been.
Well, we've been in business now in South Africa for 33 years. We're actually based in Goodwood in Cape Town, but we've got 9 branches throughout South Africa. And 22 years ago, we started developing this technology because there was a demand for a medical dose of ozone because, the capsule ozone treatment has been around for a while, but that's a higher dose. You know, they put you in a capsule, they put a towel around your neck, and it's called an ozone sauna. And that is then going in transdermally through the skin. You can't breathe that stuff because, as I said, it's a slightly higher dose, and that would irritate the lung tissue. So what we did was we developed technology 22 years ago, and really it's developed over the years as well. You can imagine we haven't stood still for 22 years. We've been developing this technology the whole time. For instance, 22 years ago, you had to attach an oxygen bottle to our ozone generator, whereas now we're extracting the oxygen from the air we breathe, and we're converting that into O3 inside our generator. And the important thing was that, you know, the capsules, it's a massive piece of equipment. It takes up quite a lot of space. There are hyperbaric oxygen tanks as well, which also are huge, very, very expensive. Ours is a portable system. It can be used around the home, and it's safe for the entire family. For instance, you wouldn't put a baby in a capsule, whereas we always say with our technology, from fetus to grave and everybody in between can use our technology. It's perfectly safe. You can breathe it, you can bubble it through water and drink it, and it can be absorbed through the skin. And that's important as well, Gareth, because what we're doing is we're introducing the oxygen into your body in three distinctly different ways.
Now, how much does this all cost? Because it can't be cheap to make huge quantities of ozone.
Yeah, well, look, the normal retail price for our entire system is 24,000 rand. And then we do a whole bunch of optional extras. We offer a lifetime warranty, for instance, on the motor, because we are the manufacturer. You're dealing with the manufacturer, and we issue a lifetime South African lifetime warranty on the motor, but that's normally an optional extra. And then we do things like aromatherapy oils, which kind of complements what we do if you use our system in the bath, and we do a water purification pack. And those are all optional extras. Those are normally about 5,300 rand for the optional extras.
And you really don't have much to lose here. I mean, it's not going to poison the system at any high concentration, and people can't overdose or, you know, have some kind of can it cause trouble?
You know, well, that's such an important point that you make. And yeah, as I said, we're producing a medical dose. So no, you can't overdose on medical ozone. It's not possible. It's 0.06 parts per million. And of course, your body is very, very low in oxygen. You know, we've actually done, we've done that research. If you plot on a graph the drop in oxygenation of the planet over the past 30 to 40 years, and you plot that against the increase in chronic illness, they're in direct proportion. As one has dropped, one's gone up. So we're low in oxygen. We know that. I mean, when I was a kid, I'm a little bit older than you, Gareth, as you know. But when I was
I wasn't going to say anything, but yeah.
when I was a kid, Gareth, we couldn't spell the word diabetes. I'm not saying it wasn't around. It just wasn't as prevalent as it is today. Cancer was exceptionally rare. Today it's epidemic. Heart disease is epidemic. So it tells you that something is wrong somewhere. And we know what it is. It's, you know, you need an abundance of oxygen at a cellular level for the body to heal itself and prevent illness. And that's really what we do. People say to me, but you make this sound like a miracle cure. It really isn't. All we're doing is providing the human body the level of oxygen it's demanding, and the body does the rest.
Okay, but the amount of oxygen in the atmosphere has not decreased. I mean, we've got more of
that.
But minuscule amounts, and it goes up and down because there are plants producing oxygen all the time, and we're producing CO2, and a lot of that also produces oxygen as a part of certain industrial processes. If there were more oxygen in the atmosphere, everything would catch fire, right?
Well, yeah, oxygen is flammable, whereas ozone is not. But yes, but the oxygen saturation in the air we breathe has dropped over the last 30 to 40 years. Yes, as you say, it's not a dramatic decrease, but there's been a decrease. And obviously our lifestyles contribute to illness as well. So we have to do whatever we can to stay healthy. And if we can provide...
Sorry to interrupt you. Can you give me some examples of where people have said to you, you know, this has just dramatically improved my life, and in what ways? Because for many people, you know, there are a lot of things on the shelf these days. We go into pharmacies and we see all kinds of oils and ointments and cures and drops and things that people try. And some of them work for some people and don't work for others. Some of them are, you know, psychosomatic, you know, so there's some element of this that people convince themselves is helping them. I mean, I know people who, for example, like Sia, who you can see on this call now, Sia over there, he believes in moisturizing. Like you've never seen anyone use so much moisturizer in your life. Look, he does have a great skin, but I think he's probably wasting thousands of rands every single month on his moisturizing. Have you got some interesting testimonials from people about how it's helped them?
We have. We've got thousands of them, and on our website, they're there. I mean, I can send you a testimonial, for instance, from a lady by the name of Bev. Now, just as a simple example, and talking about skin, you mentioned Sia with his moisturizer. You know, this lady, Bev, she had struggled with eczema for 50 years of her life. She's 57 years of age. And so you can imagine she's been through the mill. Yeah. She's had the cortisone creams and the steroidal creams and all kinds of good stuff. And nothing was working because, you know, cortisone doesn't get rid of bacterial infection. And at a cellular level, eczema is bacterial in nature. Now, right. Cortisone doesn't kill bacteria. However, ozone does kill bacteria, germs and viruses in the air and in the human body. So, yeah, she invested in our technology. And a week later, she phoned me and she said, but she's not sure about this. Now, it's really, her eczema is very much the same as it was before. And I said, you know what? You've had eczema for 50 years of your life. Give us a chance. 2 weeks after that, she sent me a voice note, a testimonial, saying it had completely cleared up and gone away completely. And of course, it doesn't come back. And there's a reason for that. We're treating eczema in two ways. We're treating it at the blood flow at the epidermis. We're also treating it topically on the skin. Now, we know that ozone kills bacteria. Bacteria cannot exist with ozone. It kills it on contact. It is 3,000 times stronger than chlorine at killing bacteria. So you can imagine if you can... let me ask you another question. Have you ever heard of heart cancer, Gareth? Cancer of the heart? No, you haven't.
I'm not a doctor.
It doesn't exist. So why can't you get cancer of the heart? Well, it's simple. The heart is the one organ in the body that is constantly saturated in high oxygenated blood. The blood in the heart is very highly concentrated with oxygen. So if we can provide the whole body and all the organs in the body with the same level of oxygen as the heart, it stands to reason that we can attempt to prevent cancer, for instance. And we've known that since 1932. And I'm not saying to you that we cure cancer. We don't. There are several ways you can cure cancer, and the oncologists are very good at that. But can we prevent it? Well, we've known since 1932, because of the work of Dr. Otto Warburg, a brilliant German scientist, that cancer is an anaerobic cell. It doesn't like oxygen at all. So once again, if we can give every organ in the body the same level of oxygen as the heart, we can help prevent cancer. And we can certainly help people who have had cancer and want to stay in remission, obviously. And we can help people recover from treatments like chemo and radiation and those kind of things. But yes, on our website, lots and lots of testimonials, testimonials from doctors and GPs who are using ozone therapy now because they're a bit tired of dishing out pharmaceuticals.
I don't see a reason why this shouldn't be tried. I mean, it sounds to me like it's really interesting. I have I've learnt a lot from this conversation, and I think it's got me curious. So I think there are probably other people who also feel a little bit curious about it. So where can we find out more, and where can we get your information, and how can we talk to you?
Well, look, our website is a mine of information, and as I say, there are lots of testimonials on there as well. It's www.windsorhealth, that's W-I-N-D-S-O-R, health, all one word, .co.za. Mm-hmm. But also, we're going to do a Cliff Central special offer for 10 of our listeners. We're going to offer them a 6,000 Rand discount on the entire system. So in other words, instead of that 24,000 Rand that I mentioned earlier, they would pay just 17,999. And for those first 10 listeners, I will then include all of those optional extras worth 5,300 Rand. And you know, we always say, Gareth, our product is an investment in your number one asset, your health. All right. Can have all the money in the world, and if you don't have your health, you've got nothing, I promise you. So they can send me an SMS or a WhatsApp, 071-452-0308, and I will deliver those 10 personally and explain everything in detail and chat to them about what illnesses they're struggling with and how we can help.
All right. Well, very good to get your feedback there. Thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, Gareth. It's been a privilege. Thank you.
There we go.
Have a super day.
There's Paul Honeyford. And I, if you want to find out more, go along to windsorhealth.co.za and you can find out more. Fantastic. All right. There we go. Something to think about this morning. Excellent. Wow. What a busy day. Almost 8 o'clock and I've got lots to do today. I mean, have you noticed how strange this spring day was? There was snow in Bloemfontein. There was very bitterly cold weather across the country. It rained. Did you get some rain yesterday afternoon, Sia?
Loved it. You know, I was actually watching something when it started raining. I put it on pause and I just sat with the rain for a moment. It was really good.
It was cold fucking rain. That's what it was. Miserable.
I wasn't outside. Don't have the feeling.
No. I was walking. I just got from my car into the house, and it was like it was really cold rain. It's definitely still a little bit of winter left in the system, so we got to shake it off. Anyway, I'm looking forward to today. I'm getting stuck into some exercise. I might even.
Oh, we have a new episode of So What Now tonight.
Excellent. I might even go to gym next week. I'm thinking this might be my last week of training at home because now they've said. You don't have to wear the mask the whole time in certain places. And, you know, so that appeals to me.
You still have to book your place though, right?
I think so. I'm going to find out what the rules are. And if it's too much, I'll just keep doing it at home. But if I can without, you know, a maximum of fuss, I'll probably go back to the gym. Yes, you mentioned So What Now. So we've got a brand new episode tonight featuring David Hasselhoff.
Yay!
I mean, this is a guy who has been on TV since I was a child. He's just the most amazing dude. And look, he's a little bit crazy, like anybody who's been around for that long. I mean, he says some things that you kind of roll your eyes. But he's just such a warm human being, such a good personality. He connects with people. It's a natural thing for him. You can see why he became a TV star and a famous man. And, you know, he's the biggest, like, artist in German history or something. He's such a multi-talented dude. He was the genius behind Baywatch. So you've got to give credit where it's due. It's not just his acting and his singing and his own personal talents, but his ability to create this world where other people's talents can shine. I mean, I think he's a real winner. So David Hasselhoff, plus an incredible panel. We have three people who I think are three very wise people who can help us to figure out the way forward. You know, the one part of lockdown and coronavirus we haven't really talked about very much is the spiritual impact on people. The fact that we haven't been able to commune in religious communities, which is a very important thing in South Africa. It's massively important to people's mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being. And we speak to Rabbi Yossi Goldman, who's from the Sydenham Shul, and he's someone who's he's been a friend of mine for years. So he's somebody who I like talking to about these things. Jacques Rousseau, who I've also known for a very long time, he's a professor of ethics at UCT and a devout atheist, if there is such a thing. And he brings in a philosophical take on the whole thing. You know, for those people who are not necessarily formally religious, And then there's Pastor Pushy Watson, who I've only met for the first time in this show. First of all, she looks like a supermodel, which is hard to ignore. I mean, I never judge my guests just on what they look like, because you could get a very bad impression of people or a very good one. But this woman arrives on my TV show on Monday when we recorded, and I'm like, good Lord, how come I haven't seen her before?
And then all decked out.
Yeah, and then she had some extraordinarily valuable insights to deliver too. So don't miss the show tonight at 8:30 on ENCA. That's channel 403. And let us know what you think. Great guests, really interesting conversation, and hopefully lots of interaction too. You can always get hold of us on social media. Just use the hashtag SoWhatNow.
You'll even be watching it with your new fixed TV.
That's right. My TV's fixed. I can watch my own show.
Yes.
How embarrassing.
Great times ahead.
How embarrassing that I haven't been able to watch my own TV show.
And you can watch it while you've made toast from an actual toaster.
No, I'm glad you're paying attention.
Welcome to the 21st century, Gareth, with technology.
I'm stumbling into the 21st century myself. Great. All right. Have a happy day, everybody. We will see you tomorrow, bright and early at 6 o'clock, but don't miss the TV show today. CliffCentral.com.